Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today my guest is Laura Kennedy, CEO of Avalon. Avalon is a busy management production company that is rooted in both the UK and the US, a straddle that brings advantages from a copyright perspective, as Kennedy discusses. The company has grown along with the global demand for content. It's invested in shows that have traveled widely, including comedies Catastrophe, Everything is Going to Be Okay, and Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Avalon's library of 3,000 hours of original content helps provide a steady stream of earnings. Kennedy is an alumnus of Lionsgate. She took the reins at Avalon just about 6 months before the pandemic hit. The COVID-19 curveball forced some delays and added some extra expenses, but Kennedy's game plan has not changed. Make great shows, represent top creatives, and good things will follow. That's all coming up today on Strictly Business. Laura Kennedy, CEO of Avalon, a very busy management and production company that it has offices in the UK, Los Angeles, and New York. Thanks for joining us, Laura.
Thank you very much for having me.
So Laura, you took over the reins of Avalon about not even 6 months before the world went into a global pandemic. Obviously, probably not on something that was on your radar in terms of management challenges in your first year. I guess I would like to start by asking, how much did the jolt of the pandemic change your plans as you came in? I'm sure you had a vision for what you wanted to do as you came in the fall of 2019 to the CEO job at Avalon. How much did the pandemic force you to change or adjust your game plan?
Certainly it was not on my roadmap to deal with a global pandemic within a few months. And obviously it's been a very challenging year for so many people and so many reasons. Other than facing fire drills that were not anticipated and you know, navigating, shutting down productions, restarting, and the sort of risks of assessing the risks of producing in this environment. Outside of that, our strategy has remained fundamentally the same. You know, my vision when I started versus sort of where we are today is fairly consistent. And for context, I'd say, you know, the pandemic, I don't think has radically disrupted our industry so much as just accelerated trends that were in existence pre-pandemic. So, you know,
right.
We aim to represent a roster of diverse and distinct artists in our talent management business. And in our studio operations, our goal is to produce a slate of exceptional content for global audiences. And that was the case before, it's the case today. And I'd say, if anything, the experience over the past year has probably highlighted some of the strengths of our business model. Certainly been a particularly valuable time to have diversified operations in multiple markets, the importance of retaining rights and the value of owning a catalog of over 3,000 hours of IP and this consistency to the importance of working with really distinctive talent and how valuable that is. And that's very much at the core of what we do.
Did you have to make the toughest call on things that might have been early gestating? Did you have to make any tough calls about letting projects go or just things that would have been unfeasible for timing or for whatever reason?
We didn't, you know, very, very, very fortunate. None of our shows were canceled. We were able to get everything back up and running. So thankfully, we weren't faced with some very difficult decisions that others may have encountered in terms of, you know, what had to be completely written off. For us, the hardest decision was making sure that we had safety protocols in place that we were comfortable with, that the teams were comfortable with, that we could operate under, you know, with confidence that we could kind of manage an environment that practice social distancing and working through the creative to ensure that we were sort of managing that as best as possible. But thankfully, we were able to get everything back up and going, and have completed delivery on anything that was shut down temporarily.
Mm-hmm. Has that been, even just the cost of testing and PPE for an independent company, has that been a significant cost for you to absorb on your productions, the need
absolutely.
For those kind of protocols?
I mean, absolutely. The cost of producing in this environment has definitely gone up. I'm grateful for the fact that we have a lot of our production based in the UK, where there is government-backed insurance available. There wasn't for a period, but the government did introduce it on a retro basis, and it's still in place. There's no such commensurate insurance available in the US. So the risks of producing and the cost of producing through this pandemic have absolutely gone up. Some buyers have been more ready to support studios and independents in terms of covering those costs than others. It has been a decision on our part to invest in order to maintain that production cycle and keep everything going.
The explosion of streaming platforms that are US-based but have global ambition, that must just be kind of the best of all worlds for you and the business model that you have at Avalon.
Well, it's certainly great to have so many buyers, both for talent and for shows we're taking to market. And like you say, with global ambitions, it is there is more demand just in aggregate for the volume of content than ever before. And there's more demand for, like I said, unique stories, different stories. There's a willingness to take risks that wasn't there before. I'd like to see more of it, but all of that is a net positive for independents and for artists.
Has it been with your library? You said you have about a 3,000 hour or episode library that must also open up licensing opportunities. Do you that library is yours unfettered to yes. distribute and license?
Yes. Yes, and it's not only the streamers, but also the growing AVOD platforms, and it's just it's a great time to be selling into a market with so much demand for content, and the trick is making sure we stay disciplined on the deal making side and really championing those projects so they can build audience awareness and engagement amidst this sort of somewhat saturated market.
Do you find that when you do licensing deals, do you find that you're licensing really like a bulk amount of shows, or do you do bespoke deals like show by show in various territories? I imagine that even for a smaller library like yours, that could get very complicated in terms of figuring out, who has what and when.
Yes, but it's sort of that's the game too. So we will do both, especially in the situation right now, like with new AVOD platforms coming and online and streamers launching into new markets who are looking for a lot of programming at once. We will do deals for multiple shows at one time with one buyer, but more often than not, we are actually doing bespoke deals. And like I said, I believe that's sort of something that's distinctive about how we operate. And we are not just, we have a scaled business, but our strategy is not really volume. It's about being bespoke. It's about giving each project, putting our very, very best foot forward and going just all in ways that sort of some of our bigger competitors may not do.
Mm-hmm. And you have content licensing that you have operations in the UK as well as New York and LA handling those kinds of?
Yeah, I mean, our distribution team is based out of London.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
But our team is global. We're a really fun size in that we have the local expertise and infrastructure in both the US and the UK, but we're still small enough that we can operate as a global team and without the sort of bureaucracy of layers and having to sort of stifle that collaboration and contributions from both markets.
Mm-hmm. Tell us just kind of about the size and scope of Avalon. Roughly how many employees do you have?
About 140 full-time employees. We represent over 700 artists and produce 20 to 30 shows in any given year. We also have a live promotions business out of the UK, and we take, we usually take 20 shows on tour every year as well.
Mm-hmm.
That must obviously a business that was probably, you know, that has been challenged in the last year. Do you feel there's a lot of talk in the live event space of hopes for a really strong second half with pent up demand, people dying to go to a concert, a play? I'm one of them. I can't wait. Are you anticipating a lot of demand?
No, we certainly are. I think everyone is very, very enthused about what the fall will look like and the demand for live entertainment again. That's an example of an area where, like you say, it has been hardest hit over this past year. Very grateful that we have diversified operations where we're able to pivot our focus and mitigate that. But we have pretty high expectations. I mean, I was surprised that we had sought so few refunds through this past year. So while we had to obviously reschedule all of our tours, or most of them, a few of them were able to go forward in Australia and New Zealand, but we had to reschedule most of our tours, and we actually saw sales uptick. So I think, you know, if that's any indication, I think people have held on to their tickets, they're excited to go back, they're ready to go back, and we're all looking forward to the world sort of resuming.
Does having that activity in the live event space, being in the business of touring artists, comedians, performers, does that help you on the production and development side? I would imagine that that's a great place to scout for talent and kind of get a sense of what the pulse of what audiences are responding to.
For sure. I mean, it's a big part of our talent operation. We've promoted more Edinburgh Fringe Festival award winners than any other company. And it is absolutely an area where we build very, very strong artist relationships and learn what it means to promote artists at the very early stages of their career and how to support them once they found great success and, you know, are playing to big arenas.
We'll be right back with more from Avalon CEO Laura Kennedy after this break. And we're back with more from Avalon CEO Laura Kennedy.
How did you get to Avalon? What was the path that led you to become CEO of Avalon?
Avalon was actually my first job out of college. So I have known the team at Avalon for a very, very long time. That's how I know the company. But I was really thrilled and excited at the opportunity to join when I did. I just think the company it's always been a great team and a great business. But what the team's been able to do over the past 20 years and continuing to scale the business, I think is really amazing. And it's a exciting time to join the company as CEO at this scale. And I felt like I could have an impact and was excited to be back in an environment that's truly entrepreneurial in its culture and energy and at a phase in its growth that is about building for the future. There's so much momentum. I was really excited to rejoin the company in 2019, given where the company is in its growth trajectory and where the market is and the opportunities that I see ahead.
In the past, there have been tensions in management production setups that at some point clients might feel like they are encouraged or pushed into projects. How do you mitigate against that feeling like maybe there was a conflict of interest that led me to be in this project versus a project from a that is not produced by Avalon in any way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think that is a great question. And I think it's really important to note that we were a talent management company first. That is very much the DNA of the company. And if we were ever to force clients into working with us in any way whatsoever, it would be our own demise. So there's sort of a natural organic hedge against that conflict of interest. It is very much about what is best for the artist. And there are cases, there are times when working with Avalon as the studio is a really great opportunity. More often than not, that's not the case. You know, we only work with a small percentage of our clients on the studio side. And our clients are working with, you know, every studio out there. And so it's really the DNA of the company, I think, is very important in that we're not a production company that's expanded into talent. We are definitely a talent management company with a full-fledged studio operation and infrastructure. And that DNA, I think, is actually important in navigating that conflict, ensuring that you're never forcing clients to work with you internally, but you're providing that opportunity when it makes sense.
Gotcha. Laura, before you came to Avalon, you spent many years in climbing the executive ranks at Lionsgate. What would you say your experience there at a larger studio operation, but still the youngest of the studios, still the smallest of the studios, what did your experience there, how did that influence and kind of inform what you're doing today?
I think the entrepreneurial culture at Avalon today reminds me so much of my early days at Lionsgate, and that creative energy and momentum of a business that is the upstart or an upstart in this industry, right, with much bigger peers, but figuring out where your competitive edge is, how to be distinctive, how to execute with excellence across the board and always put your best foot forward, how to balance being opportunistic and harnessing that entrepreneurial hustle with a disciplined and strategic vision and business model. I think all things are very relevant in at Lionsgate when we were growing so meaningfully in my early experience there. And there's a lot that I took from that experience. It's very similar, I think, to where we are today and how we're managing the business and how we're thinking about investing for growth. Mm-hmm.
And Laura, what was it, taking an even further step back, what was it that you think in your experience in your life that put you on the business track, that put you on a track to be a CEO?
I did not discover an interest in business until I started working. I was like an English lit undergrad. I was all about language and theater and was surprised to find myself so interested in the business side of this industry once I started working. So I kind of discovered it, I would say, relatively late compared to many of my peers who've, gone on to become CEOs or come up the business track in their careers. But I discovered an interest in it. I went to business school. I was like, let me learn some fundamentals. I literally didn't know what a P&L was when I was applying for business school. I was like super, super green. And I've loved it ever since. So I stayed on the business side of the industry for much longer than I ever expected to. I love the puzzle of figuring out how to build a sustainable business that is a win-win for everyone. I'm still incredibly inspired by creativity. So for me, this is a wonderful place to be in a position to try to figure out how to build a sustainable business that allows us to invest in and support creative artists and talent and do what they do best. And I love that mission. I love that challenge. And it's a great platform to be working with to try and achieve that.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.